Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You are listening to Coach Hayes Huddle, where he connects the fans to the fundamentals of football.
You cannot play fast and confused at the same time. You better be ready to squeeze the down and flathead the guard as it pulls. Thanks for joining me. Look forward to talking with you soon. It's Countdown to Chaos. Move this over here real quick. As I said, this is Chris Hayes at Coach Hayes Huddle. I'm glad you joined me this evening. And we're going to be talking about a lot of things as we move into the summertime. You know, we're getting done as far as classes are concerned. I know already college classes are over, finals are taken. I know summer workouts are already beginning. For me personally, we're at the end of the year. Finals have been taken. Just getting ready for that post-planning days and getting ready for a good summer. And then summertime is when it's heating up. And I know a lot of people are out there talking about how we lost on this gentleman you see here on the screen, and a lot of people are past that point. But the reason why I've got Jackson Cantwell up on the screen is because there was a unique perspective that I gained and learned more about in this time of NIL, and while we've got all this loose money that's running around right now, it really gives us a feeling of instability. It gives us a feeling of there's not being a control factor with it all. And I know there's a house settlement coming, which is going to equalize revenue sharing and things of that nature. Coach Smart spoke on that to Paul Feinbaum actually during the golf tournament, a little bit more in depth about that later. But you know, uniquely, I think that when you have someone who offers a bag right out of the gate to someone and you look at what happened in this process, you know, you sit there and think about Jeff Sintel interviewing him after he had chosen Miami versus Georgia. Georgia was high up on that list too. But I mean, you look at when you have Drew Rosenhaus as your active agent, and this guy's trying to make money. It's plain and simple. We can throw we want to look at development. We want to look at the opportunity to see if he's going to improve and get better. Hey, how's it going, Mike? I got you in here. Welcome in. Appreciate you showing up tonight and hanging out with me for a little bit. You know, when you look at the perspective, you know, Georgia was a close second, and you look at Drew Rosenhaus, and what he's trying to do is obviously make money not only for his prospective client, but he's trying to make money for himself. So a lot of this money is going to come in on the front end. And the way I look at it from that perspective is that Miami had pushed all in. All right. They had the ability to do it. And I know there's a lot of fans out there and say, we got still plenty of more money that we can work with other recruits. But I don't really think that's the case. I think you really put everything in one pile and moved it in for this one guy because you really feel in perspective that this is going to be a transcender for you going into the future for your recruits, because you bring a guy like this in, a high five-star recruit, number one offensive tackle in the country, possibly the number one recruit in the country. And all of a sudden you think that's going to create a trend, a snowfall, you know, snowball effect that's going to be effective for you at Miami. But unfortunately, I think when you do that, I look at it as a desperation call, because it's not good business. Because everybody out there who's looking to bring this gentleman in is going to do it from a business perspective. But when you've got all your chips thrown in there and you're having to spend all this money on the front end for this young man who has yet to take a snap of his senior year of high school, I'm looking at it from a different perspective. There's no way I'm spending millions of dollars on a kid who is yet to even play a snap for me and is going to be coming into my school, into my program that I have established a culture, the longevity of the culture, and he's making more money than a three-year vet is that has worked his way up over time. I just think that's unfair, and it's not good business. And Coach Smart says it's not good business. And that's the way I think that a lot of these guys are having an issue with how we are presenting it, and that we're out of money or we're broke. I hear it all the time on Twitter and things of that nature. Got Alan shouting out there, hello from Ottawa. Rarely catch anyone live, but this is two in a row for you. That's almost a habit. Uh-oh, you get it three times, we're going to make it habitual. That's going to be an issue there, my guy. But appreciate you being in with me, Alan. It's always great to have people in. Definitely want to make sure you stay with me as we continue to move forward. I don't want to go too far in depth about this because, to me, I feel like it's something that we're still – I'm going to say this. I don't care what's happened with Drew Rosenhaus and with the agency and all this money that's on the front end for this kid who's not even played his senior year of high school yet, but we're still going to recruit him. We're still going to work on him through December. And I would say that more than likely he is probably cemented in to his commitment to Miami because of the money deal, because of how that money and the allocations of those funds are subjected to his agent and Drew Rosenhaus and being able to pull all that money on the front end. But when you put all your chips in, like I said, you're sitting there with nothing left in your hand, and now you're trying to go out and find these other guys, these other recruits, and you're having to basically work your way back to say, well, listen, we can do this, this, and this, because now we've thrown all of our chips in with this number one recruit, this number one guy that we really wanted, and you don't even know if you've got a return on your investment yet. I find that just to be a spirit of desperation. Now, every five-star recruit that you put money into, that you invest into, you are hoping that you're going to get a return on investment. There's no doubt about it. Georgia's done it plenty of times as well. But you look at an Ellis Robinson, a five-star corner, the number one cornerback in the class 2 years ago, and he has yet to really see any solid play on the field yet. He's having to develop. He's having to work over time. But I promise you, he's being taken care of as he's been there for the last 2 years. And now he's going to have the opportunity to level himself up to play this year, have some productive reps, and get some reps on tape. And that's going to help his incentivization to get more money. That's the way that productive business works, and that's what Coach Smart's doing, saying, listen, we're not going to pay an offensive tackle $2 million, $3 million to come in, and you're making more money, like I said, than a three-year vet. You have yet to take a snap in a college football game. Heck, you've yet to take a snap in a senior year of high school football game. Are you a talented individual? Sure. Do I want to see you do well wherever you go? Sure. I am purely an advocate for high-quality athletes that are also – they're wanting to get their money. I get that as well, but you got to have a return on your investment, Jackson. So now the ball is in your court with you and your agent and with your family and the decision that you've made to go down to Miami with Mario Cristobal and that group, all right, to try to go down there and do well for that program. And honestly, I don't know if Miami is that place because they don't know how to fill up a stadium. They'll get excited at the beginning of the year. As the year goes on, you'll see that place become decimated as time goes on. And I don't know, you may still end up being a day one draftee in the NFL down the road if you stay with Miami. But, you know, when it comes down to it, are you going to be happy about going 9-3, 8-4, struggling in the ACC? If you can't get all the puzzle pieces together that makes a team become more dynamic, because it can't just be one guy that you're putting all your eggs in the basket for, putting all the money to the table for. But anyhow, let's look, got some people in the chat. I just want to throw some people out there. Appreciate the film studies, et cetera. Love learning real football. Not enough real football knowledge amongst fans. Lucas, thank you for your kind words. It's always nice to see you in here, and thank you for being here with me tonight. Charles McCormick, always enjoy your commentary to me. Agree that UGA looked a little desperate here. Heard Seven Cloud sign with Rosenhaus as well. Yeah, that's what I was about to segue into, because the caveat to what I'm trying to say about Jackson is that Seven Cloud, who is a UGA commit currently right now, defensive line commit, also got Drew Rosenhaus as his agent. So, you know, things could happen in the same way. And I'm going to tell you this, Kirby Smart is not going to change his dynamic when it comes to the business plan that he has seen. He has been in the NFL with Coach Saban. He went to the NFL with him. He has obviously been a head coach now in the SEC and been, you know, been an SEC program for almost two decades with Alabama now and Georgia as a head coach. He understands how it works, that you've got to have a patient kid who understands, listen, you're going to get your money and you're going to get some that you deserve because you have the accolades to deserve them, but you're going to have to earn it because you're creating this entitlement to these kids, just like with Jackson Cantwell. You're creating this entitlement where everything's given to you in the front end and you don't have the ability to go out there and really earn it because you've already got it. So that makes your work ethic change. It makes you not want to work as hard. It changes perspective. And I don't care what you say. If you have a kid coming in making millions of dollars and making more than some of these 2 and 3 year seasoned vets that are in there that have been blood, sweat, and tearing it, you know, in practice every day, in games every day, there's going to create some bitterness. That's going to create an issue. And to me, that's what is more of a problem here in this situation. With Coach Smart and crew, you've got to earn, because if you are going to make what you do coming in introductory to the program, and then you produce in your first and second year like you should, that's the return on investment. That turns around to say, listen, you've earned this extra step that we're going to. To me, that's good business. And if you have a kid that's understanding of that and wants that, then you're going to have a very productive program and a cultured program that's in it for the long haul, that sees the production of longevity over time, that develops a kid, also incentivizes that kid to get better and work hard for what they want. And all of a sudden, you're having better return on that investment at the end when that kid finally decides to go to the NFL draft, declare for the draft, and you're seeing more day one, day two, day three draftees for the NFL that Georgia's producing over the last 5 years. You can sit there and argue at a mute point all day long. We won that, you know, you Miami, you won the trophy for the recruiting battle for him. But you know what's funny? Jackson Cantwell's said it himself. His recruiting didn't take off until Stacy Searles offered him. He obviously wanted to go to UGA and look at it, and that's why Drew Rosenhaus brought him up there that weekend before. They wanted to see what was on the table for him so that they could basically maneuver and manage what was going to happen with him at Miami. I think there was nothing that platformed him to say, hey, he was all of a sudden strongly going to Georgia because he was going up there the weekend before he committed. I think he was going up there to negotiate. There was no doubt about it in that process. So, you know, that's what I wanted to basically say about that situation. All right. Welcome in. Appreciate all you in here. Kong, it looks like got a Go Dogs there. Go Dogs to you. Yeah, I've got somebody saying not Bozo's fault, in my opinion. You know, there's not really anything you can say about this. If you want to blame anybody, you blame Coach Smart because he didn't put a bunch of money on the front end. I'm glad he doesn't. I'm glad he actually looks at it from a business perspective. And I'm glad the way he handles business with NIL, and it's not going to change. Only unfortunate thing is going to change when revenue sharing gets hit and all of a sudden all this equalizes out where all schools will have the same amount of money to spend in NIL incentives to athletes. It's just going to change the perspective of who all the other athletic sports programs that are not big revenue builders, if they have enough revenue in order to survive. That's going to be a big issue on the backside of this. Football won't be affected. Basketball, baseball, the big three won't be affected. But some of those other sports that we're seeing national championships in right now, like tennis and your golfs and your track and field, those could be affected by this in the long run of the situation. So, you know, Jackson Cantwell, congratulations going to Miami. I hope you have a productive time down there. I hope it's not all in waste because you had so many people that wanted you down there for a high-end money bag deal, very similar to what like Justice Terry going out to Texas. I hope the return on investment is what it is. I hope you see success. But unfortunately, I see long-term, I don't know if this is best benefiting Miami in the long term because it's really superficial. There's no depth to it, and I don't think it's going to grow any roots. So moving forward, as you know, this past weekend was the scavenger hunt. And part of that process was to see new kids that are coming in and wanting to have an opportunity to be impressed. And as you know, the scavenger hunt weekend is always a fun weekend of finding Coach Smart, making the picture with him. And a lot of good things happen. It seems like every year we always have a kid that's highly influenced over that weekend. And when they come down off that natural high being there for the weekend, you'll have a couple that may start talking a little bit. There starts to get a little bit of chatter. You know, I'm showing Ryan Mosley. This was the tag that they used. If you're watching by video, you can see here on the screen, this was the tag that they used just to kind of give them a little intro package when they come in. It's laying on the bed and wherever they're staying that night. And there's all this stuff that they give them for their official visit. And I really think they do a great job. The marketing program with Georgia is phenomenal. Their videography and what they do is unbelievable. I think it does a great job of promoting the program and promoting the culture of the program as well. Top notch across the board. But Ryan Mosley is one of those guys. He's an athlete, 6'2", about 205 pounds from Carrollton, Georgia. And they got him listed as an athlete, but I know right now wide receiver is where we're looking at him at. And I really am excited about him. Watching him on film, there's some good things about him. I actually be doing a breakdown on him later on next week. So, you know, hopefully we can see something from him. But there's one real big talk about right now. Shedarius Tootle, all right, is a Auburn commit. But right now there's a little bit of chatter that there is a possibility of him flipping to the University of Georgia, especially after the weekend. He's one of the ones, the scavenger hunt. He comes in, he's like I said, a prospected inside linebacker. He reminds me, along with like Nick Abrams, who's another one that we're looking at right now, those two heavily fit sort of that Chris Cole size and frame. They're very long, 6'2" to 6'3", around 215 to 220 pounds. They fit that frame. And you can tell that Glenn Schumann and Coach Smart are going after that style of player, it looks like. And I love it because we saw what it does like with Chris Cole, for example. When you have a long body with long reach, not only are you good in coverage, you're good in zone press and manning people up, but you're also good to cover ground. And when you cover ground and you get your hand up in the air over a ball thrown that's being layered, that's huge. And both of these guys can hunt. You're not going to be recruited to the University of Georgia if you're not striking the match, as Coach Smart loves to say. I love that saying as well. It's just that you know, when you strike that match on the side and light that head, that's exactly what he's talking about, is bringing the heat and popping the pad. So both these guys bring that pissed off mentality. I love their style of play. And Shedarius Tootle is this guy's name at this point in time, still committed to Auburn. He's from Mobile, Alabama. So, you know, if he decides to flip and come to the University of Georgia, I would have to say that the scavenger hunt weekend was probably a pivotal weekend for him. And so I'm excited to see what happens with him, because he's another guy that definitely would add to the depth that we have at the inside linebacker position. So what I wanted to show you real quick, because of the possibility of the flip to their commitment from Auburn to Georgia, maybe we get him to flip, I wanted to show you a quick breakdown that I did on him. So if you're watching my video, I'm going to be showing that to you. If you're on podcast, I'm going to be basically talking over a video from him off of his huddle. And so if you're watching my video, stay tuned to this. This is Shedarius Tootle. He is a linebacker that is committed right now currently to Auburn. But he was at the scavenger hunt this weekend at the University of Georgia, and I think we really impressed him. Hopefully he's not coming down off too big of a high, because I know that we obviously put a big impression on him anyway. There's no doubt that we are looking at longer, rangier type linebacker fits, because this guy fits that profile, along with another one that I'm very high on, and Nick Abrams. But almost have sort of that Chris Cole look to him. Very long armed, very rangy looking kid. You know, I've got here on my stats, he's at 6'3", roughly around 215 pounds. He is out of the Mobile, Alabama area, so obviously I could see his connections to an Alabama school. But right now, Georgia made a big impression on him this weekend. You know, when I watch him on film, like I said, having that long body, he definitely has an eye for the football. He tends to see the flow very well. His cloudy clear fits are really nice. It takes him to the play without lost footwork. Like I said, because he does have the long body, he does have the tendency to work a little extra hard to punch press blocks, and will try to avoid and use his speed to redirect back over the top to the play, because that sometimes can take him out of the play. I'm impressed with his football IQ. You can tell he communicates really well. And again, not afraid of contact, but at the linebacker position, who would, you know, if you shy away from contact linebacker position, you're playing the wrong position anyway. But he does a really good job of his pursuit angles and working, and he has relentless pursuit. He doesn't tend to waste any motion when he is moving to the football. Here he gets lost in space, but he comes back to make the play right here. I would like to see his eye discipline get a little bit better, but I think that'll happen going into his senior year, something that'll be better for him as we move forward. If he does decide, you know, eventually to come to Georgia and maybe decommit from them old Auburn guys out there, I think that looking at some more notes here, he does play with a high hat at times, so that does tend to work. So you can see right there how hard he had to work through all that trash to get to the ball carrier. That's something he'll get better at as he gets older, to work punch and press through that to bubble the gap instead of running around the gap to try to avoid the block. I think his zone drop work, you don't see him really in man covering guys out of the backfield in man, but, you know, his zone drops look really good. And he closes to the football very well. Seems to be a very good tackler, too. Love to see him wrap up and do good things. So, again, this is Shedarius. So, we have Shedarius Tootle from Mobile, Alabama, current commit to Auburn. But it would be nice to see a flip to the University of Georgia, knowing that the scavenger hunt weekend was a big weekend for him to make that decision. When you have a kid at this age, when they come into an official visit, it's really nice to be able to see somebody on the backside to this, because it's kind of getting off the natural high that you have from being at a school, talking to all the coaching staff, talking to all the players, and you see what it's like to be there. I think there's this natural high that comes from all of that. It goes to pretty much any school, I'm sure, that they go to, because they're going to want to definitely take care of them while they are there. They're going to spoil them, and they're going to make them feel like they're the most special person on earth. I think the main thing is that the coaching staff for this guy basically said, we want to be real with you. This is where we see you fit. And you've seen what we have produced at the linebacker level, CJ Allen, Raylan Wilson, Chris Cole, Justin Williams, already becoming those actual spearheads for that this year. And, you know, I'm sure when you get real with this kid and say, here's what I see you being able to do, and being able to fit all of those, you know, pieces to the puzzle for him, it really makes for a it really makes for a good visit. It really makes for a solid commitment. And if a kid is going to make that decision and do the actual flip, they know they're doing it for the right reasons, and they're not doing it just because they're coming off of that high that they've had from the weekend of just feeling like, man, this is just a great place. They made me feel so special. And then after you commit, then you kind of feel like there's sort of a remorse in committing, because you just kind of went off the fleeting moment of it instead of actually rationalizing, hey, is this the best fit for me and my family? I think Auburn obviously is still in there with it, and I know that he is going to be talked to heavily from both sides of it, but there is a possibility for the commit flip to happen, and I'm excited to be there for it, because if we get him, I think he's going to be a massive asset for us in the linebacker room. Going to the next one. Now, this is another one that we're heavily involved with right now. I think Texas and us are, you know, neck and neck with this kid. This is Mark Bowman. He is out of Mater Dei High School in California. And if that uniform looks familiar, I explain it here in my breakdown for you about it, because there's someone else that we just got from that same high school that you'll find out for when I do the breakdown on him. This kid is a tight end hybrid. He wears the number 19. A lot of people are going to associate him being like Brock Bowers. I won't spoil what I've got in the video for it, because I talk a lot about that. But, you know, if there's one thing that I think in today's offense that you need are hybrid type players that can both put their hand on the ground, and they also can stand up and play a wide receiver, but also play both positions very effectively. That's becoming more of the unicorn, and probably becoming just as much of a heavy asset to an offense as your right and left tackle are and your quarterback position is, because of the diversity of that player, what they can do and what they offer you in an offensive scheme. Because of the fact that we didn't land Jackson Cantwell because of the business terms that he decided against for the University of Georgia, I think this allows us now to go after some more people with that mentality to sign and have them, or not sign, but commit and obviously eventually sign and be a part of our program. And I think Mark Bowman would definitely fit that criteria. Real quickly, it looks like I've got a question over here. Georgia used to be able to flip players pretty good. Nowadays, seems like we struggle to flip. Is it because of NIL? I think without a doubt it is. I think you're seeing more now, and you see with Georgia. Georgia doesn't rarely have anybody that goes in and commits and then flips on them as well. We haven't had the drama in the last couple of years. The people who have tended to commit to the University of Georgia are staying. I think a lot of the flips that you see are exactly what I talk about. It's where they make sort of a commit or remorse in their commit because they get that natural high of being at the school, making feel good. You know, all the things are given to them, all the accolades. They go through all the profiles and all the picture taken and everything that goes along with it, and they get all excited about that, and they get caught up in the moment. It's very easy to do that. I would honestly, if I'm Coach Smart and staff, which I'm sure they got some people that communicate this to them, is like, if you really want to do this, I want you to think on it. I want you to sit down and think on it. Don't be spontaneous with it. Don't be impromptu with it. Come in with a, you know, clear heart, clear mind. Think about it. Look at your pros and your cons. What have we done that's going to make you feel like the commitment needs to be there for us? And I think that's one thing that's going on. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people who are going to schools committing just purely for the money. They feel like it's generational money that will never be able to get again. And, you know, they feel like if they get all that money on the front end, you know, everything works well. I think maybe that we look at it from a perspective of how we do business. And I think it's set up for the right way and the right terms because, hey, you're a great athlete. We're going to bring you in and we're going to probably pay you just sub or just south of $1 million. This is what we've got guaranteed to you when you come in. Plus the, you know, the advertising, the marketing, and all the different things that you can make with the secondary marketing that you can do with it. Hey, if you do this in your first year, if you make a special teams, if you get, you know, enough reps on defense or offense, whatever you're coming in for specialty wise, then all of a sudden it turns around and says, hey, if you hit this mark, this is what you're going to get the next year. And if you do this, this is what you're going to get the next year, all while being developed at the University of Georgia, playing in front of hundreds of thousands of fans every weekend, being able to have the chance to play in front of some of the most premier organizations that you could ever imagine, being profiled every week, getting a chance to show up, you know, show up and show out every weekend. And all that's going to do is just help promote yourself while you're developing, getting better, and being incentivized all while you go along. I'm trying to figure out right here with Lucas. You said something about KJ. Are you talking about KJ Bolden? I'm thinking about it. That's who just off the top of my head here. But anyhow, Randy, welcome in, buddy. I know I kind of catch you right in the middle of yours versus mine. I don't know if you're doing your show tonight or not, but definitely welcome into the show with me tonight. But Lucas, if you could elaborate on that, just help me out a little bit better. I would definitely try to elaborate for you. But yes, I think when you look at NIL being the primary target to today, it's just sort of that intangible, sort of that, you know, that nuclear feeling of, you know, just not knowing what direction certain elements are going to happen with a specific player. You know, God forbid Jackson Cantwell comes in as a five-star recruit, looks the part. I've done film work on him. I definitely know he does the part. Oh yeah, I got you, KJ. We flipped him from FSU. We sure did. He was one of the few ones that we've done over the past year. And I remember doing a little spotlight on him, a short talking about, let him go to FSU. That's perfectly fine. Kirby Smart is relentless in what he does. If he's not recruiting you all the time, all the way up until December, maybe even until February, which a lot of these kids that are committed to other schools, doesn't mean we just quit talking to them. We're going to work on them all the way up to the day that they put pen to paper. And sometimes pen to paper don't even matter anymore, it seems, in today's time. So, you know, but KJ made the right decision. I think probably KJ took off and went that way because of the same situation. There was that natural high. He was down there for the weekend. They made him feel like, you know, the king for the day down there, the king for a couple of days. He probably made a choice that was not beneficial for him. He came home, rethought it, and over time, you know, Coach Smart and staff stayed with him and kept working with him, and you know, eventually over time he made the right decision, and look how that's paying off for him. Could you imagine him right now in that decrepit FSU team that's just going downhill? I mean, it's basically, as of right now, you know, for lack of words, a shit show. So, you know, I'm glad that KJ made the decision to come to Georgia. And, you know, that's the thing about it. A lot of people who are on the outside looking at him and say, well, you just got UGA bias. You're just butthurt because Jackson Cantwell chose Miami. No, I'm not. I want him to be a part of a program that wants him to develop him to the best of his abilities and take his five-star talent and make him the best offensive tackle in the world so that when he goes to the NFL draft, he's got guaranteed money for life in his four-year contract that he will sign that will be generational money for his family, his children, his children's children going forward. If he goes in with his front end money, I'm going to tell you right now, believe it or not, that money he gets on the front end, I know a lot of people say that you could live off that for the rest of your life. I know I could. But when it comes down to it, if you make that kind of money, you spend that kind of money. Sometimes they don't invest it very well, and that's a different property too. And all of a sudden, you get to the last years of your eligibility, and you get drafted, and say you go second or third round, and then you go in there, and you end up just becoming another guy, just another guy on the roster, and you end up fizzling out, drying out. All of a sudden, you've got to find a degree, you know, the degree that you got at your school, and figure out what you want to do with the rest of your life. There's a reason why there's a 3 to 4 year contract window, and a lot of them don't get picked back up for that fifth year. That's the reason why you see it all the time with the ESPN updates that you see for NFL contracts. You know, we're not going to pick up him on his fifth year of his, you know, of his contract. There's people that have got to earn that. I want to see him go out there and be successful, but also too, I don't want him to go out there and just kind of, like I said, be front loaded with all this money on the front end with, you know, without showing any proof that he's going to do it and keep, you know, entitlement to that money all while, you know, going in and trying to be the best version of himself that he can be and him not come out in the wash and it ended up being no return on the investment. And you put all that money, those chips are in the pot now, and you can't do nothing with it. And now you've got yourself a, you know, sort of a lemon in the process of like buying a car, you know, and everything on the front end. And now you don't have anything to return on that investment. I hope we get Tyler Atkinson, Lucas. All the years he's been coming to the UGA camps, etc. I think he belongs at Georgia. He's going to be one that we're really going to fight hard for. But I think, you know, right now my feelings are he's going to end up going probably to Ohio State. That's just my thoughts right off the top of my head. I think it's going to come down to the contractual agreements and what he's going to be dealing with NIL. And then again, I don't know his family well enough. I don't know what discussions are taking place. I know that, you know, Grayson High School being locally to the area, I would hope that there's advocacy for us to be at the University of Georgia. I think he's definitely not dumb and sees what we have produced. I say we, what University of Georgia has produced over the years at linebacker levels. He knows he's going to get into the NFL, but he also knows that there's opportunities for him from a money perspective too. So when it comes down to it, it's going to be a business decision for him and his family. And I don't know which decision that's going to be, but I think it's going to be one of those where we'll be fighting with him all the way down to the wire. I don't see that being something that happens anytime soon. Would it be nice? Yes, but it changes where we go with, for example, if Nick Abrams the second decides to come in. He's from Mineral, Virginia, I believe. You know, him, he hasn't committed anywhere yet, and he is another body type that's very similar to Chris Cole, very similar to the Shatarius Tootle guy that I just showed you a second ago. So I like both of those guys as well, but obviously seeing Tyler Atkinson, he looks to be that generational talent, that five-star talent we're talking about. We want to see him come in and be productive and produce, and we'll just have to see as time will tell going forward. But I know Ohio State's not going to make this easy for us in the process too. Mike, where's Troop and Smooch? Laugh out loud. They always invite you to their show. Why aren't they at least watching? Just kidding. You know, I know those guys are busy. They actually invited me on their camping trip that they just had. I always enjoy being on their show because I just enjoy the camaraderie we have with them. We get along very well. But like I said, they got their own thing going on as well. And I might end up having Troop and Smooch on my show eventually as time goes on. But yeah, thanks for asking on that. Let's see. I got Bruce saying, I agree, Coach, Ohio State's pockets are hard to beat. And, you know, and that's okay. That's the thing about it. I think a lot of you make a good point, Bruce. There's so many people who ride on the coattails of the momentum that we have in recruiting, because with Coach Smart and what we have done in the last 5 years, our recruiting programs have been stellar. We've been in the top five for the last 5 years, obviously two national championships to show for it, SEC championships to show for it. And you just think because of that, that naturally is just going to bring the recruiting. It does. It helps recruit. But I'm telling you what's actually helping our recruiting trail more is how many NFL people were getting drafted. I remember back, I was telling this to one of my buddies the other day, when Alabama was having such heralded success through the 2010s leading up to the COVID year in 2020, the reason why I thought that we were ever going to get competitive with the University of Alabama is we were going to have to start drafting kids that we could develop through, and they were going to start getting drafted to the NFL, because I think that NFL draftees are the ones that are helping our recruits understand, listen, you may not see all this money on the front end, but by the time you graduate, if you are a three-year player like a Brock Bowers who comes in and does so well his freshman year and plays over a three-year period versus a four-year period, whether you're a three-year kid, a four-year kid, we are going to develop you. We are going to make you ready for the NFL. You're also going to be incentivized. You're going to be paid very well for your productivity and for your abilities as an athlete, whether you're a three-star or a five-star, i.e. Ladd McConkey, i.e., you know, you don't even call him a three-star when you look at Dan Jackson, you know, being drafted by the Lions. Come on, man. So, you know, I look at all those kind of situations. To me, the more draftees we have in the NFL is going to help versus, believe it or not, the national. Now, don't get me wrong. The national championships and the SEC championships, they help. But I think the NFL drafts is what is helping bring that along. But I don't even care if we finish it. You know, if we're in the top five, I think we're in good shape. It's all about the development of those players. And I really want to see us have the opportunity to take those kids and bring the ones in that want to play. Because he said it out loud in many pressers. If you are coming in and all you care about is the money, then the University of Georgia is not where you need to come. He said that out loud, verbatim. I don't want you here if that's all you're thinking about. because it's just not going to be the right place for you. So, you know, I think about those things, but, you know, it comes back to it. I hope and pray that, you know, the opportunities for these youngins that we do recruit are coming in for the right reasons and obviously being incentivized and taken care of as well. So here is Mark Bowman. Again, I kind of got off topic there with some of the questions, but that's perfectly fine. This is Mark Bowman from Matter Day High School out of California. And I'm going to leave it there because I want to talk to you about some things. There's a lot of similarities that we're definitely going to see in this young man. So here you go, my video. This highlight of a recruit is Mark Bowman out of Matter Day High School out in California. If that name sounds familiar, if the uniform looks familiar, it is the same high school where Nate Frazier went to. And I hope Nate Frazier's in his ear right now because there are a lot of glaring similarities that people are going to want to put with him and Brock Bowers, not only number 19, but the position that he plays and how he plays it. He is a hybrid tight end that's going to definitely play as a number two receiver in the slot a lot, very similar to how we use Brock Bowers. But also what I like about this kid, even though I'm really not comparing him to Brock, I'm just talking about the position that he plays, is he's highly versatile. The one thing I notice is he's very polished, even being he's a 2027 classification kid who's going to reclassify to 226. But when I watch him on tape, I am seriously just highly respective of his blocking ability. He blocks like a freshman in college already. Watch him right here bury this kid, staying on him with great form, moving him and just burying him in the ground. He's a great route runner. Honestly, high school film, what I love about it being this position is he shows everything that he can do from base block to down block to pulling on ghost power blocks where he's the kick out guy or the actual wrapper. He does a great job in space of finding open windows for his quarterback. He makes it highly easy for him to be visible and seen. He uses his body very well. Like right here, he looks like he's going to block to get space and then gets out on the quick out route from the quarterback. But running with the ball after it's caught, you can see, even though he's got longer legs, you can tell he's very strong in his hips. I like what I see right here off this delay out off of this. He could have thrown it to the post right there too, to the number three, but still, when you look at his totality of what he can bring to the University of Georgia, right now Texas is pushing for him very hard, slips out here on the toothpick and gets a good gain. But, you know, I think Georgia is definitely in it for it. But what we've got in our past history, we've had a quality amount of tight ends that have played, obviously, over the last 3 to 4 years. And I know Bowman has seen that and known the quality of our players and how we utilize the tight end. You would think that he would definitely see that and want to have an opportunity to showcase his abilities as well at the University of Georgia. I love him. I mean, you see him as receiver. You see with his hand down at tight end. Here he got a deuces left personnel with a pro to this side. It's a quick shoot route out to the out route. And I mean, he is definitely an aggressive kid. You can see that he's being coached well from the tight end. He does not hesitate. There's a great down right there, just destroying him with a tackle. I mean, I love the fact that Matter Day runs more of a pro style set, very similar to what Georgia runs. So you get to see a lot of how we're going to utilize him in our offense too. Look at him get the stretch. He needed to stay on that block a little bit more. I don't know if I'd have put that one on tape there, Mark, but still though, overall, I mean, I recorded about 3 minutes of his 5 minutes of tape. And I got to see what I wanted to see in those first 3 minutes because everything right here, we're in a Ricky set, Ricky Ace, and he's going to come across in motion to trips. He's going to get this little edge block right here as well. I kind of like that little scat back they've got there too. But, you know, this is something that I'm going to start over here. This is something that I'm really excited about with Mark Bowman is that he creates that hybrid look that we want in our offense from someone that can put his hand down in the ground, that can block at the line of scrimmage, but also line up as a number two receiver and do this right here is something that you want to have in your offense as a versatile player, someone that's aggressive, who's very technically sound. But, you know, I think he's around 6'4", 230, so he fits the dimensions of what you want at the tight end position. I think that's perfect for what we want to see. But, I mean, he moves that 240 pounds very easily. You can't even tell that he's carrying, or 230, I think, actually, 6'4", 230. You can't see that he's carrying that kind of weight. I mean, he looks very light in his feet. Look at that right there, man. I'd take that all day long. I mean, you can just tell that he is fundamentally sound with how he's coached and how he plays. So this is definitely one that we need to keep our eye on as we move forward into the recruiting season. I think Mark Bowman is someone we need to definitely look at heavily and recruit very heavily. I think he adds massive assets to Georgia's program and just continues that long lineage of Georgia football and at the tight end position of what we've done for the past few years. But, you know, Mark Bowman out of Matter Day High School, out of California. Again, it's not the same high school that Brock Bowers went to, even though a lot of people are going to look at his number and they're going to compare him a lot to it. But I mean, it's very exciting to see someone of this caliber as a realistically should be going in his junior year of high school. He's reclassifying now so that he can be recruited in the 2026 class and definitely brings a bright future to Georgia's offense as we move forward. So, you know, I hope that we continue to pursue him heavily because he is someone watching on film, I enjoy watching and seeing great things from. So, you know, from his hand on the ground to, like I said, running routes from the number two position, highly versatile, very strong, very quick in his hips, and great hands, very strong hands, and definitely fits the profile of what we want to see at the tight end position. So Mark Bowman, Matter Day High School, 6'4", 230 pounds. Definitely going to be high on the radar for our recruiting system and for bringing him to the University of Georgia and making another Matter Day high school athlete a Georgia boy. So, as you can see, my Southern drawl kind of gets in the way because I've had some vocabulary police or the pronunciation police get after me. I do think that it's Matter Day High School out of California. Now, in the Brock Bowers similarity, first off, yeah, he's got the same number. He does look a lot like him, plays a lot like him. I don't know. Napa Valley is where Brock Bowers was at school at, so it's not the same school. He is at the same school that Nate Frazier came from, though. And after watching film, I know it probably got you really excited to do that. I do want to do a real quick shout out here with Bruce. I don't ask for this at all, ever. I'm one of those, I feel like if you like the show that you have a tendency to just feel compelled, if you want to help me out. But obviously me wanting to do this for a long-term venture is definitely helpful for that. And, you know, I'm never going to ask for contributions, but Bruce, I can't thank you enough for that. That means a lot. But even if those of you who can't give or anything like that, you're watching the show and contributing, just like I had Charles here say, you know, if you could just give me a like and just help with those algorithms that help out with liking and sharing and obviously getting notified. You can also see up here in the corner here, I actually have a Linktree scan that you can actually use your phone for. And that takes you to all my socials where you can actually get plugged into all these breakdowns that I do. Guys, right now I probably have 8 breakdowns. We have 3 safeties currently at this point in time. Thank you, Charles. Thank you, Chuck. I appreciate that so much. Excuse me, Bruce. Charles and Bruce. Yes, thank you very much for that. But we've got 3 safeties right now that are committed to the University of Georgia. In Zach Fort from IMG, we've got Jordan Smith from I think it's from Houston County. And then, goodness gracious, a lot. Keelan Jones from Sprayberry High School. Thumpers, all 3 of them. Got those broken down as well. I'm going to be putting those into my YouTube channel. I have them under my Recruits of the Week. So if you ever want to get a chance to see those, you can catch them both on YouTube and on Twitter. And guys, I do appreciate the support. And thank you, Randy, for reaching out and helping me support Bruce there with that contribution. That means a lot. And of course, you just being here with me tonight means a lot, guys. I don't want to put you out because, like I said, bottom line is I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't know that there was somebody out there getting some information that they liked. And hopefully I'm helping contribute to that. I do have a question here. Has the money that's available for players in college changed the mindset of high school players? Are kids training any different to increase their chances of earning their share? I really do think that's a great question. Honestly, kids are going to be paid based off the ability of how they can play, what they produce on film. So you got a kid who comes in like I was mentioning a while ago with Jackson Cantwell. You know, he's got all that money now on the front end. He has yet to play a down as his senior year of high school. God forbid something happened to him this year. But don't wish that upon anybody. It could happen to anybody. Ryan Montgomery, quarterback we got last year, tore his ACL before they've even come in and played a college down. I think that's setting up disaster because, like I said, what it does is it ruins a kid's work ethic. It ruins a kid's willing to work harder, to have more humility in their play, to realize patience. You think Ellis Robinson right now probably isn't fighting that every day? I'm sure he is. Number one recruit is cornerback coming out, and he has yet to really get to see the field as much as he anticipated to. But if he stays and he's patient with the process, he is going to be very valuable for the University of Georgia, and he's going to see that those assets will help them. I mean, you look at some of these guys that play 1 year. They sit for two. They play some spot play. All of a sudden, they're developed. They're stronger. They're faster. They've incentivized. They're now in their third year. They go out and ball out their third year. They're a day two draft pick. I mean, playing 1 year. If you think about it, a lot of that does happen in today's time. But I really do think it's going to come down to the fact of having these kids. That's the reason why, to me, the business side of what Coach Smart does is says, listen, I want return on my investment. If I'm going to give you your money, I don't care if you're a five-star or a no-star. If I'm going to give you money on the front end, I want to see a return on investment by year two. And this is what I'm going to do for you by year two if you fit that bill. But that's going to make them earn it. And that's what I'm seeing the problem with NIL nowadays. It's who can front that bag to start with. They may lose everything else. They may gain that one diamond in the rough. They won that one recruiting battle, just like Miami did after they got Jackson Cantwell. But what's that going to do for the longevity of their program? What's that going to do with all those other blue chips they would love to have to create a program and build around a Jackson Cantwell, who's going to be obviously not even there for a Carson Beck time this year because he's still playing his senior year of high school, and then come in making that kind of money, and you're going to have some bitterness on the other side as well from players who don't make that kind of money, who have been putting in their work as well. And I just see there's so much disconnect and conflict with that. If you know coming in from the University of Georgia from a business perspective that you're making this kind of money, then what everybody's going to see in that, because you're still dealing with 18 to 22-year-old kids, 23-year-old kids, they've got to see some fairness in it too. Because if I'm a kid that's coming in and I'm a pretty decent athlete and I've got another one that's coming in and his comps are roughly the same as mine, but yet he's making more money than I am just because we wanted him very heavily for a position need, and he's in there playing in my position, making more money than I am, but yet I feel like I'm a better player than his. Do you think that's going to create some bitterness in a teenage kid? You damn right it is. So it's going to come down to the fact of being fair and consistent with all of these youngins, incentivizing those that do, because if you come in and you show out in your first year, in your freshman year, we're going to incentivize that. That's part of the program. That's part of what Coach Smart does in his business, and something that I really appreciate him doing that for, because to me, that means you've got more kids who are bought into the program and the culture of the program wanting that development, but realize there's going to be that incentivization of the funds as the years progress through their college years. Appreciate Jaywalk giving us the update on Diamond Dogs 1-1 with Oki right now. I do know that they are playing currently. I didn't realize it till I forgot they got postponed from yesterday. So I think their first pitch was like at 5:30 this afternoon. So definitely want to see those Diamond Dogs take care of business. If you can keep me updated, that would be great. Bruce, I think the parents' influence has a lot to do with NIL recruitment. I mean, it should be, but I think Ellis could have got a lot more from NIL, but his mother loves Kirby Smart. I do agree with that. And you're right. I mean, parent influence has a huge factor into it. I think that's what affected Jared Curtis as well. You know, Mike Bobo was a huge contributor in getting Jared Curtis to recommit to University of Georgia, but his parents heavily loved it as well. And I think for the purpose of wanting to see their kid and be able to support their kid, the distance range really helped us being closer to him from Nashville to here versus all the way out in Oregon with Dan Lanning. So, you know, uniquely, I think that was a good fit. But you're right, there are a lot of intangibles that we don't even know about that go into the process of this. You know, a lot of people want to just throw out the knee-jerk reaction of it's all in the bag, who threw the bag out there at the last second. But yeah, it should be about the bag. You want the kid to obviously be incentivized, but you want to be incentivized the right way, because when it comes down to it, it is a business. And I think Coach Smart does it the right way. And there's a lot of people that stand on those laurels and won't budge from them. But I think it's good business when you look at it from a long-term perspective. So definitely the parents have influence. Second part of that question, are kids training any different? I think kids today are more adaptive to going into college, because you've got so many good high school coaches, especially in the state of Georgia. I remember when I played, I couldn't tell you what a three technique was from a nine technique. And now these kids understand, hey, if he's in a cover three influence, they're matching on this side. They're probably going to roll to either a cover two. They might even go to a cover one. And I got to be looking for the high low to the right-hand side because they're on the wide side of the field. And that's the tendency they show in film. You got all that? You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm working with my kids when I was coaching them. You know, we're sitting there looking at saying where their tendencies are at, and here's the high hat at, where's the low hat at. Let's re-green here. Let's come off of this. Check with me, and we might want to go to the boundary side. You know, that stuff didn't happen back when I played in the late 80s and early 90s. It was, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust because everybody was under center and you had 50 fronts and eagle fronts and all that kind of stuff. Now it's wide open. It's crazy the differences that you have here. But I think kids are more prepared to go into the college level physically and football fundamentally, but maturity wise between the ears, cerebrally, is not there. And that's something that has to be learned, because you got to have the talent catch up, or excuse me, the cerebral talent catch up with their physical talent. You know, so that's the big deal that I see with it as well. Star Wars dog, man, it's good to hear from you. And by the way, anytime you want to share some bourbon with me, brother, we'll do that, no doubt. But it has changed, and that's part of adapting. To me, if you're not adapting, you're dying. To me, that's something that you have to learn to do. And I think Nick Saban had finally gotten to the point where he was mentally exhausted with the adaptation to it. You can't take the ball coach out of him. He still wants to coach. But I think the mental exhaustion that goes into what was beginning to happen, what he was beginning to see, where every kid coming in as a commit wanted to know, well, how much money are you going to give me? That was just something that was out of his ranks. He didn't want to deal with that junk anymore. And I think that's really what drove him out to retire. Because even though you love the game and you love coaching the game, unfortunately, there's a lot more headaches that come into it than just coaching X's and O's, as most of you probably know. Going into my next session, what I wanted to talk to you about is X's and O part. Now, when you look at this scheme that's on the screen that I have right here, most of you probably know that Georgia runs a 3-4 defense. So that means you got three down linemen. That's the TNT you see up front, covered up as a zero technique in the nose. And then you got two fours, which are the two tackles. You've got your Will and your Mike. That would be like your Raylan Wilson, CJ Allen. They're both in 20 techniques. They're two eyes over the top of guard sitting at second level. That's why you put a 10 symbol with it. So it's 20 techniques, not twos, like you would at the defensive line. And then two outside linebackers, and then you got a four high shell safety look, corner look. We are a 3-4 defense, but as you know, we don't run this actual personnel on the field a lot of the times. And a lot of people get confused when they're thinking, well, are we really a 3-4 team? Are they not running a 4-3 right here, or a 3-3 stack, or what are we in? And what I was going to show you, and it's because of the fact you see what the offense is in right now. The offense is actually in an ace personnel set, which is basically either 10 or 11 personnel. You have a Y as a tight end, which is considered the tight end and one of the 11. And then you've got one back, which is the other parts of the 11. And then you got three wide receivers. Or you could be in 10 personnel. You take the tight end out, put another receiver in at the Y position, and you have no tight ends. That's why it's 10 personnel for zero, and then one back would represent the one. So 10 personnel versus 11 personnel, and that's because that's what you see in college football so much now. You see a lot of spread offenses in gun. So what we have done to this, I'm going to show you real quick, is what Coach Smart with a 3-4 defense has adapted to that, which is what we call just a nickel look to it. With now what you've done, you'll notice both the outside linebackers, I'm going to go back to the original one here, see the OLBs, those two positions are switched. And now what you have, they've become the N, the nickel that's out there over the top of the H, and that J you see there on the right-hand side, the jack, you probably hear them call a lot of times. So what they've done is they've modified to a four-man front, so that basically they can still play the run with six in the box and adjust with either the jack, the wheel, or the mic for passing situations if need be. And then they've got a nickel support, a guy like a Tyke Smith, someone like a Janelle Aguero that's played that position. I know that Ja'Cory Foster might be in that position this year. It's Terry Foster. Ja'Cory Thomas, I think, is what his name is. I think he had him at strong safety in the G-Day game. They were rotating a lot of guys in at nickel. I saw Zion Branch, Zachariah Branch's brother, in that position as well. And the opportunities really present themselves, because what you want is you want to have that nickel who can play not only in coverage against slot receivers, but you also want them to have the ability to come up and handle the run. So you've modified to a four-man front, so you can still play the run. You can still adjust with your jack, which was Jalen Walker a lot. Last year it was a little bit of the kid that went out to Missouri, Damon Wilson, and what Gabe Harris is going to be giving us this year along with Contavious Johnson. And that nickelback is going to be someone that we're looking to, you know, prove themselves this year. If it is Janelle Aguero, great, but there's a lot of other guys that are fighting for that position right there. And that's the reason why the nickel position to me is very similar to that hybrid H position that I talked about on offense. It's because you have to be able to do two different things. You've got to cover a shifty guy like a Zachariah Branch in coverage or zone, but you've also got to be a headhunter on defense and come up and tackle like a linebacker. And you just don't see a lot of kids that are that way. That's the reason why you see so many safeties being drafted nowadays, is because of that very situation. Because if you think about it, your strong safety, your free safety, and your nickel are all safety positions. So typically 85 to 90% of the time, you're going to have three safeties on the field at the same time at all times. One playing free, one playing strong, one playing the nickel. So there's a reason why we're basically recruiting a ton of safety safety play right now. So that's what this basically has come down to. So what I did is I just gave you a real small insert that I want you to watch here. And I want to show you the personnel positions that go into this. About a 3-minute video for those of you who are watching by video.
This is just a nickel package, all right? And most of you in here have heard this person right here is called the star on our defense, and that's the nickel defensive back. Why it's a nickel? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, just like a nickel, all right? So you get 5 defenders now in the secondary, and now you've walked an outside linebacker up. Now you say, why do you change this? Because a lot of people say, well, this is not a 3-4 anymore. This is just a 4-3 modified, because your Sam backer is widened, which is what you typically do with a 4-3, and he becomes the Sam backer now as the nickel. All right, and you got a true 4-man front. Notice I moved the tackle over to a 2. I moved the nose over to a 2. And now this tackle right here is in a 5 technique, which is outside eye of the tackle. And this is going to be probably like Joseph Jonah Jonye. You're going to have people like that. You're going to have people like Kristen Miller probably sitting right here at this tackle position. And at your nose, you're going to have Jordan Hall. Okay, this jack is going to be probably somebody like Gabe Harris. And you may say, well, where does Quintavious Johnson fit into this? Well, he doesn't right now. If you're in this defense, he's going to be in other situations that you have. But he played a lot of jack this spring because, obviously, Gabe has had labrum surgery. And then, of course, we know at the mic we got C.J. Allen, and at the wheel we got Raylan Wilson. Okay. Now, the nickel position is yet to be determined, because right now at strong safety we've got Ja'Cory Thomas that has been playing out there, number 20. And, you know, right now there's a lot of different people that are moving in at the nickel position. I know that Zion Branch, believe it or not, a lot of people are talking about Zachariah Branch, but Zion Branch has been playing a lot of nickel. And, of course, we know that we've got Janelle Aguero there as well that could be playing that nickel position as well. And it's because teams are spreading you out now more, is that you want to have somebody more athletically built like a defensive back, but also can come up and actually take care of the run as well. This guy right here has to be one of your most gifted players on the field. Tyke Smith did it for us, the kid that transferred in from West Virginia that finally, you know, came into his own, got drafted by the Bucks. But this is a guy that can cover a guy man-to-man, all right? He can play zone, play the middle hook curl area or apex defender player. All right. But he also can come up and lay the wood and, you know, knock the piss out of somebody too. So that is the reason why this position is so critical for Coach Smart, and why you see him recruiting so many safeties, because theoretically 85 to 90% of the time, we're going to have 5 guys on the field as defensive backs, where you're going to have a rotation of at least 3 safeties on the field. All right. So this jack now becomes that defender. And a lot of people got confused last year because Mikael Williams was playing that tackle position right here. And a lot of people are thinking that he's actually at the jack position, when realistically he's just been shifted in a stem to the 5 technique as an outside edge guy, which is fine, because that's something we want to see him do.
So as you can see here, that was just something I wanted to show you real quickly. There are so many different things that can happen over the summertime, and we'll see who be added into those pieces. But right now, I feel like you've got Raylan at one corner, Daniel Harris, Raylan Wilson at one corner, excuse me, Raylan Wilson at inside linebacker, along with CJ Allen at the other linebacker. You got Daylon Everett and Daniel Harris at your corners. Again, Ja'Cory Thomas, he had the starting, you know, at the G-Day game, you know, beside K.J. Bolden. And then we're going to have a rotational bunch of group up front. But I think Joseph Jonah Jonier is going to be one. Jordan Hall is going to be one. Kristen Miller. Xavier McLeod will be another one. We'll definitely see Quintavious Johnson in there on rabbit packages with Gabe Harris. And, you know, not to mention some of these other guys that we're still not even thinking about yet right now in the process. But I just wanted to give you guys just a little bit of an identity to what our defense actually does and how it adjusts to different fronts. That's just one of the many types of stems that we could do. There's probably four or five others. I actually show that to you in a breakdown on my channel. So if you're interested in that, you can go in and take a look at the full show. That's about 10 minutes long that I did on a breakdown of all the different stems out of the 3-4 look that we show against different offenses. So what I wanted to finish up with tonight, and I wanted to show you real quick, if I can get this in here for the caption here. I wanted to put my hunker down session here for this. The reason why I've got this in here is because even with people saying I've got Georgia bias because Gunnar Stockton's not on this list, is that, you know, this is via Joel Klatt, as we know, is pretty much a Big Ten guy. He loves the Big Ten, is going to promote and advocate for them. On three obviously published this. It came out on Twitter this past week. But what it shows basically is what he feels like are the top 10 college football quarterbacks. Now, honestly, you could put these 10 to me into a Yahtzee barrel and spin it around and throw them back out and rearrange them for all I care. I don't care where they go in this situation. But what I want to make sure you understand is that there's one guy in particular on there that I do not understand why in the world they actually have him at that spot. And that is, of course, Arch Manning. If you look at all these other guys, as I went down and did some research on all these other guys, I think Cade Klubnik, John Mateer, who's coming from Washington State to OU, and that's going to be a big adjustment for him coming to the SEC from the Pac-12. And not, you know, his season numbers are not great. They're good, but not great. But that adjustment in the portal, plus also, you know, taking on against SEC defenses, I don't know how that's going to come out. Sam Levitt basically was, I love the moxie of that quarterback. A lot of you guys saw his play against Texas. But, you know, when I look at him, you know, he was behind the Cam Scataboo running back that I love to death. And when you got a good running game and a kid that can carry and tote the rock like he does, takes a lot of pressure off your quarterback having to go out there and throw for 350 yards a game. Drew Aller, I think, again, just is the benefit of a weak schedule that Penn State has. Penn State has maybe two games on their schedule to me that are really what I would just call, you know, something that would be tough competition. The rest of their competition in the Big Ten is just very flat. You know, Garrett Nussmeier, I think, is proven, definitely needs to be in the group. DJ Lagaway, again, I don't know his situation. I think he tapped out against Georgia. A lot of people, Florida fans, would stick by it to say that he was the reason why, you know, Georgia was able to still win, that Florida could have beat them anyway. But, you know, we don't know that because he decided to finally have this hamstring injury, supposedly, or a leg injury, and didn't come back in the game. I think he's got a high ceiling, but he's not proven enough to be, to me, in the top 10 yet. Lenore Sellers, I think, needs to be up there. If he wasn't hurt against LSU, I think they still beat LSU. Lute Altmyer, you know, I look at him 9-3, beats a South Carolina team at the end of the season that was kind of driven out by all the people that had opted out not to play. Again, their schedule is a little bit tougher in the Big Ten, but again, I just don't see him having the proven capabilities of being in a top 10 situation. I just don't see that right now. Just again, I know we're looking at what we have here. I see maybe six of these guys. Again, you could just reshuffle them. I think Cade Klubnik probably should be in the top three up there. Carson Beck, I think, is, believe it or not, going to have a better year this year if they can block for him up front, because he's going to be in the ACC throwing the ball around. If he's got anybody that can catch the football from him, don't be surprised if Carson Beck has a better year this year, honestly. I wanted to make sure that what we see here is the Arch Manning. I'm not even trying to prove that Gunnar Stockton needs to be in this top 10. And the reason why is because he's not proven. Does that mean I don't believe in him? Not at all. It means that I just don't see enough on tape that can make me go out there and say, hey, he needs to be in the top 10 talk right now. Now, as again, all these other guys on here, you could probably throw them in a little Yahtzee barrel, swish it up, throw it back out on the table. They could be rearranged for all I care. But there's one in particular that drives me nuts, and I know it drives a lot of other people nuts, and it's because of the pedigree of his last name. Because he has Manning in his last name, for some odd reason, he's some kind of proven person. You know, even though he only had three starts last year, I think it was against UTSA and against Colorado State, and then he played Mississippi State, which I believe if I lined up my granddaughter and my grandson at wide receivers, they could run by Mississippi State's defense. It was one of those things where they just felt like they had something. But when you – I don't – you know, Sark has got to hurt Quinn Ewers. And as soon as Quinn Ewers is able to basically put a weight on his foot again, he's starting again. There's a reason why you have somebody in there over this prodigy that they have. And I'm going to go ahead and say it. I watched Arch Manning's football huddle when he was being recruited by Georgia. I watched it all the time. And I really felt like that he was good, not great. And it comes down to it. Do they have an offensive line that's going to be able to block for him? He can run with it. And he's going to probably have a little bit of success that's going to get everybody kind of hyped up and excited. But is he going to be that proven quarterback through the whole season that makes you put him not only in the top five, but number two on the list? It has everything to do, Joel Klatt. And I know you're listening to me because you want to tune in and hear what old Coach Hayes has to say here in old Northwest Georgia. I know you really give a rat's rear about my thought process on this. But I'm going to tell you right now, we have got to get off the Manning bandwagon and let him prove himself just like a Gunnar Stockton. I feel like four of these 10 will be irrelevant by week eight. We won't even be talking about these guys by week eight. I hope that Gunnar Stockton is someone that we're talking about relevant by week eight. I feel like he can be, but I'm not going to put him on a list like this until I see tape, until I see him put plays on tape that make me feel like, you know what, he's playing as one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the nation. Because there's plenty of them out there, and unfortunately, I think about six of these are wrong right now. But still, though, we'll just have to see as time goes on, and that's my, you know, hunker-down session with old Joel Klatt, thinking that Arch Manning needs to be the number two guy in the nation with only three games on tape, and most of those games that he did get a chance to go in and do anything in reserve. Of course, you saw what he did with us against Georgia. We took care of business with him, but he had really very limited success, if any, when he was going in for those little spot plays during games, the ones he did not start. So I just have to say, you know, I can't even think about that going forward. So uniquely enough, that was my hunker down session for today. I was looking at the different ones that I had. I had some comments that came out there while I was talking about the breakdown. Making dinner. Thank you. I appreciate it, Randy, no doubt. I want to see what Bruce has got to say here. Beck can throw. It's the decision-making that makes him suspect. Beck makes NFL throws sometimes. You know, and that's the reason why I feel like some of these Big Ten quarterbacks that he's got on here, the Luke Altmyers, the Drew Allers, those guys, I just think you're going to see. And then you got who's the one that was – oh, he was with Washington State, so he was Pac-12 coming to the SEC, and then you got another Pac-12 guy. I think that's the reason why you see them on there is like you're going to have success when you play not very good competition. You know, when you play six games or seven games against competition that's just very weak, it makes you look better than what you really are. And then all of a sudden, when you play against a proven defense, you don't show up. So, you know, there's a lot of things that go into play here, a lot of intangibles. But the only one that I'm really making a point about, because I know a lot of people who might catch this after and watch this podcast later, they might say, well, you're just SEC bias. You're just Georgia bias because Gunnar Stockton. No, I'm not biased towards any of these guys. There's not nine of them. I could care less about where they end up. Like I said, you could throw them in a Yahtzee barrel and re-roll the dice for all I care. It's Arch Manning. He's out of position. I don't know if he's proven yet enough to where he could be in even the top 10, definitely not the top five. And honestly, I don't know why the hype is there. I do know why the hype is there. I don't know why they want to put it there this quickly. I mean, they're already saying he could be a draft pick this year, eligibility wise. And I think that's incorrect as well. But, you know, I look at it from the standpoint of just because he has Manning in his last name, he's all of a sudden he's just going to show up and punch a ticket and he's just going to be a great quarterback. Prove it on field, put it on tape, and then I'll eat crow later. But until then, he definitely doesn't belong in the top.
he doesn't even belong on this list, honestly. He's the only one that I'm really trying to scratch my head over right now because I don't understand it. Let me go to another comment here. But, yeah, you know, Carson Beck, as much as I want to give him a hard time about everything that's going on off the field with him and how crazy this offseason's been with him, I think he's going to have success down at Miami if Miami can keep him off his back. Because right now, you know, I don't even know if that's going to be the case, but we'll see. Because of the competition that they'll be playing down in Dade County, Miami. I forget what the area code is down there. But anyhow, I always see him using it, though. Let's see here. I'm excited about Stockton. I just hope he believes in his play like Stetson. I think Stockton is going to probably lead us in a similar way to what, you know, I hate to say it, but I think he's going to kind of lead us like Jake Fromm did. I think he's going to be a very precise quarterback, make good decisions with the football, run when he needs to. He's not going to necessarily impress with a lot of yardage, but he's going to do everything he can to keep the offense successfully down the field. I think he's going to be very productive. I think he's going to create some explosives as well. And again, I hope and pray that by the end, I'd say week 8, like I said, some of these guys will be irrelevant at that time. I'll look and see. Hopefully he should be on this list, but I can't put him there yet because I got to see the proof in the pudding, and that comes from watching tape, because as you know, tape don't lie. Randy had a lot to say on this topic tonight, so you said some on there as well. And I appreciate you agreeing with me there, because like I said, it just comes down to the fact of, you know, productivity, put it on tape, let me see the tape. Tape proves everything to me. It's evident in how you watch them on film and everything. It's funny enough, when you watch something on film, you'll realize, man, we thought we did some good things. And then when you watch it on film, you're like, wow, we didn't do as many good things as we thought we did. We just had a good opportunity, took advantage of a situation where they were messed up as well. I do agree with that. Gunner does have a really pretty deep ball, and we got to see that a lot in the G-Day game because the simple fact is all they did was run. I think they ran fast screens. They ran the slant. They ran the slot fade, and they ran the 9 go route. I think they threw the crosser and maybe a couple of check downs, that one good one to Chauncey that he had the good run on. But that was about it. I mean, it was pretty simple. That's the reason why I kind of liked watching it, because it put your defensive backs in conflict all night long because they were in 50-50 balls with it. And you saw in the first half, DBs were winning the competition between them. And then in the end, the wide receivers were winning the competition. I think that's what made it such a successful G-Day, because as patrons, as people wanting to see good play and see explosive plays, we got to see that. But we also got to see that good one-on-one, hand-to-hand combat between your DBs, which we have some pretty stellar players in those positions, and getting to see those new receivers get to go after the football as well. But you're right, the eye in the sky does not lie, Mr. Randy. I agree with you on that. Guys, my show tonight, I really kind of went off on a tangent there at the beginning with Jackson Cantwell, so that kind of took me a little long. I do appreciate those of you who stayed with me in the chat with me tonight, those of you who have talked it up with me. I appreciate the chalk talk. If you do want to go look and see any of the smaller segments that I've done in this show where I've actually branched them out and made them a little bit larger segments, you're more than welcome to go check those out. Again, you can look right up here. You can see the QR code above my head, left side there, and scan that. It takes you right to all my socials, and I can show you all those different breakdowns. Right now, I've got about 8 or 9 recruit breakdowns, 3 or 4 that are committed, 4 or 5 that aren't yet, but are heavily looking at the University of Georgia. Remember, we talked about the Mosley kid at the beginning of the show from Carrollton, Georgia. Heavy, heavy odds that he's going to be committing to the University of Georgia soon. I'm excited about that. Also excited about Tyler Atkinson. We mentioned him earlier as well. But with, you know, the Abrams kid possibly coming, and then you've got the Tootle kid possibly on commit flip watch, that could be exciting as well. So a lot of great things happening as we wrap up this school year, getting to the summertime, and we move forward to the summer, because we got a lot of things to talk about as new recruits begin to commit, as we see people start taking shape and form. And as always, I appreciate you checking in with me tonight. I am Coach Hayes at Coach Hayes Huddle, and I'm here to connect the fans to the fundamentals of football. Y'all have a blessed
You are listening to Coach Hayes Huddle, where he connects the fans to the fundamentals of football.
You cannot play fast and confused at the same time. You better be ready to squeeze the down and flat-head the guard as it pulls. Thanks for joining me. Look forward to talking with you soon. It's Countdown to Chaos.